Jeffrey. How are you?
Boy, it's busy on this line, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable. So, Jeffrey, I just want to tell everybody that I, you know, you're someone who walks in the shoes of these artists. Not only is your artwork in six galleries, but you somehow find the time to run ArtistCube.com, where artists can take telephone classes, get one-on-one coaching, find ebooks, audio materials, and articles. I am so glad you're back, Jeffrey.
Oh, good. Well, this is fun.
Listen, I'll check back in at around 2:30, and so have fun.
Okay, thanks, Ariane. Hi, everybody. This is Jeffrey Gorman calling from snowy Santa Fe, where we just seem to be getting one snowstorm after another. And we're going to jump in today. It's 9 things you should never say to a gallery if you want them to handle your work. So that's today's class. I think everybody should have gotten an outline, and I'm going to stick to the outline fairly closely here. Obviously, afterwards, if you have questions, feel free to email me. You can either go to artistcube.com or email me. My email address is ggaarts@aol.com. Keep the questions pretty brief, and I'd be glad to answer them. So let's kind of jump in here now. What I wanted to say to you all before we jumped in is, first of all, why do you even want to work with a gallery? Because with everything you're doing, you're thinking about your goals first. Why am I doing this? So just briefly, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about why you want to work with a gallery. In my experience, you want to work with a gallery to obviously make the sales. That's always the first one. And you all know that the first question that people ask you is, where do you show? So galleries also give you a certain amount of, let's say, prestige and credibility for your work. Now, the other thing about galleries is there are certain type of people that go to galleries. There are certain types of buyers and collectors, museums, arts writers, other gallery dealers. They'll only go to galleries. In other words, they will not purchase artwork from the artist directly. So obviously, everybody on the call is interested in working with galleries, or you wouldn't be here. I'm going to try something you all just quickly here. Okay. Just trying these various buttons here. So anyways, galleries, they're really important. Just about every artist I've worked with at one point or another does intersect with a gallery in their career, and galleries can be very frustrating, to say the least. I've gotten a couple of emails from participants in this seminar, and the questions are kind of the frustrations of working with galleries. Now, let's kind of jump in with number one, and hopefully you all, what I'm going to be doing is covering kind of the challenges, frustrations from several different angles as I go through these points. Point number one, something you should never say to a gallery: I know you're going to love my work. Now, I think in saying that's really, really presumptuous. Hopefully you will have done the homework ahead of time to know that the gallery likes the type of work that you're doing. A lot of this is researching ahead of time, and you're going to hear me today say that again and again and again, and I'm going to give you various research tools as we talk today. So did you research the gallery ahead of time? I can't believe how many times when I was a gallery dealer, artists would come in and they'd go, I know you're going to look at the work, and I'd glance at it briefly and realize that it was totally inappropriate for what I was doing. And then it kind of put me on the spot right there, because the work was not correct. And, you know, do you say to the artist, you really should do your homework ahead of time? Nah, sometimes you're a little more polite. So in researching galleries, remember there's every type of gallery out there for just about every type of artist. Let's say the beginning artist or hobbyist, the person that really hasn't really defined their artistic vision, is maybe not doing as consistent bodies of work. So that's the beginning galleries. And I can guarantee you all, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I live, we're the second largest art market in the United States with over 200 galleries. There's every type of gallery imaginable. The next level I think of is the emerging artist gallery. Now, the emerging artist is basically you're unknown, but you're starting to show regionally. Okay? So you all need to figure this out ahead of time, which type of gallery it is. on to, let's say, the mid-career artist. This is an artist who's maybe shown in several galleries, maybe shown in some museums, alternative spaces, maybe started having some more serious critical attention in regional and national publications, things like that. Then obviously there's the blue chip gallery, and I think of blue chip galleries as the ones that are dealing with brand name artists, with artist estates, advertising on a national level, things like that. You all need to know the difference here. One way to do it is start getting really, really familiar with the various artists out there and what level are they at their art career. So this is a lot of research. Now, what sort of work does the gallery specialize in? Sometimes this is tricky because galleries can have a variety, kind of, let's say, a flavor for every client. But do they handle landscapes? There are a bunch of galleries in Santa Fe. All they do is handle a specific type of landscape. Do they handle figurative work? Some clients I work with who do figurative work, it's a little more difficult. There are galleries that just specialize in the figure. Abstract versus representational. There are a lot of galleries in Santa Fe that just handle non-objective abstract work. Do they handle paintings or sculpture or craft or textiles? I mention on the list here color, realism. Are they expressionistic? Are they naive? Is it folk art? Is it outsider art? Do you see what I mean? You start getting into all these different levels. Now, research tools quickly to figure this out. Obviously, the number one tool you all have is another professional artist in the field. That's the number one research tool you all have. And whenever I ask people what tool would you use, I'm hoping that that would be the answer. So one thing is to find out from your network of artists where they're showing. If your work is similar, to look at their resumes, then obviously you're going to look at websites. You're going to look at trade publications, whether they're online. You're going to look at regional and national magazines that are pertinent to the type of work that you're doing. So always start with the type of work that you're doing. Let's say you're a sculptor. Then you're going to pick up Sculpture Magazine or Sculptural Pursuit, and you're going to look at the sculpture website and things like that. So make sure you're prepared before you walk in a gallery. I can't tell you all how many times dealers have said to me, I just want them to do their homework before they come in here because it really puts me on the spot, okay? Number two, my family and friends have told me that my work is fantastic. Now, in parentheses, I've said in here, what this is saying about you is, do you have experience? Because remember, you all, sometimes the interview with a gallery dealer can be very, very short. I say they vary from 5 minutes to 5 hours, depending on how you all get along. They are judging you on a lot of things that you're not going to discuss. You're not going to talk about anything like that. They're judging you about that immediate presentation. I can guarantee you all of these things have been said to me and in my mind. My family and friends, that's great. Every artist out there started with their family and friends, and some really, really famous artists, they're the ones that maybe we might read about in a national publication or something like that. They all started with family and friends. But the gallery dealer, especially for emerging galleries, which is most of my clients, they're looking for somebody who's starting to have a diversity of experience, and hopefully it's not just your friends and family, that you've gone wider than that. Do you see what I mean? I put in here somewhat humorously, does the gallery trust your family and friends? Obviously, what I'm saying to you is they don't even know who your family and friends are. Do you think a reference like this shows experience? Obviously not. Whatever other references might be more impressive for a gallery dealer? Now, you all, I can tell you this. The number one way gallery dealers take on new artists is a reference from the artist that they're already working with. Okay? That's the number one way. Now, other ways, other references that they'd also listen to, because don't forget the gallery dealers are getting bombarded by people wanting to work with them. As I said, number one is the artist that they're already working with. Number two might be some of the collectors and the buyers that they're working with that they've developed a relationship. Curators, museum curators is a great reference for gallery dealers. Arts writers, people kind of in the trade, whether it's a framer or a photographer or a advertising someone, you know, they're going to discover you, and then you're going to say, do you know so-and-so? Would you feel comfortable, do you feel my work is ready? Would you feel comfortable to introduce me to this gallery dealer? Can you see how that kind of puts you all at the head of the line? Now, I'm challenging you. What I'm challenging you to do in today's class is really start setting up a serious network. And your network starts with artists, and it starts with all the other groups that I've talked about here, okay? So you want to be able to say something besides my family and friends have said the work is great. You want to go from there. You want to say, I was in this juried show and a famous collector bought my work, or did you see I had a little article in this magazine, or I was at the restaurant and so-and-so said you'd really like the work. So we've got to go beyond family and friends syndrome. Number three, I'm really well known. Now, I know this sounds funny to a lot of people. Some of you may not have as large an ego as some of the artists that I work with. But it's funny how artists, when I was a gallery dealer, would come in and they'd say, you know, I'm really well known in, I don't know, St. Louis or Houston or whatever. And again, to me, what that did was it challenged me, and I hadn't heard of them. And it also made me kind of feel inferior, like, oh, they're well known, I've never heard of them. I wonder what I'm doing wrong. It wasn't something that was necessarily kind of an attractive challenge to me. It didn't want me to really dig in and go, oh, my gosh. Because don't forget, you all, every gallery dealer out there is looking for artists. Even though they may say something differently, they're all looking for the next star. And it eventually, unfortunately, comes down to money. So what they're doing is they're looking to keep their client base purchasing the artists that they're working with. Having been a gallery dealer for so long, I can see the galleries go through cycles. And what happens is they'll work with the gallery, and sometimes as life kind of butts in, the artists will go through these cycles where sometimes they're really prolific, really doing interesting work. Then there'll be downtime, and that's often when a gallery may be looking to bring in another artist. Now, don't forget the other thing that dealers are doing is they're also wanting to bring in front of their clients really interesting work. So they are looking, you all. Often we're told they're not looking, but I would bet you 98% of the time that the dealer has somebody in their mind that they may either be watching the work or somebody may have introduced them or something like that. So anyways, watch out for the large ego syndrome. Unfortunately, in the art world where we're dealing with personalities, creating, let's say, our emotions are becoming something where you can see it. Ego is often involved in gallery dealers. Now, one thing gallery dealers tell me all around the United States is that they're pretty stressed. You know, it's the high cost of doing business, advertising, rent, things like that. And they're looking really to form partnerships with artists that are easy to work with. So when you tell somebody you're really well known, according to whom? Is it just yourself? Or we seem to have this phenomenon in Santa Fe called a legend in your own mind. And it's funny how artists here in Santa Fe, they say we have over 20,000 artists in New Mexico. Often I'll hear these anecdotes where they go to New York or San Francisco or Chicago or Houston, and it'll suddenly be this really, really tough world, and they'll realize that nobody really has heard of them. Now, you know, in Santa Fe, with over 200 galleries, you can make a pretty darn good living in a town like Santa Fe if you hit the right gallery. A lot of artists are making a living from one gallery, and they seem to think that nationally they're being paid attention to, but they're not. So be careful about that. And, you know, if they haven't heard of you, things like your resume is going to tell them that you have done a lot, that you've got a variety of types of shows that you've been in. The resume is really, really important, you all. The resume is kind of where it's ambition, but it's written down. In other words, a resume for an emerging gallery, in other words, a beginning gallery is not looking for someone who is really diversified at all yet, but an emerging gallery, which usually means that the sales might be a little better, the prices might be a little higher. They're looking on a resume that you've shown in a diversity of places, that maybe you've entered some jury shows, you've showed in alternative spaces, maybe you've even put on your own shows. You all, I can guarantee you, if in the first round of approaching galleries and things like that. If you don't get in, then you have to put on your own show. You have to do the whole thing and become a gallery dealer yourself. What you're wanting to do is basically create a buzz about yourself so that by the time you maybe get in front of the gallery dealer, they might have heard of you ahead of time. So, anyways, number three, I'm really well known. I find number three that men seem to suffer a little bit more on the ego department than women. That's just my personal experience. So anyways, number four, I just happen to have my portfolio here under my arm. Now, I'm not sure during the seminar if there are any other gallery dealers, but I can tell you this is a big sore point for gallery dealers. The one thing I mentioned right away here recently, I was talking to a gallery dealer, and he said that when he sees people come in with oversized portfolios, that literally his stomach aches because he doesn't know if it's going to be 5 minutes, 50 minutes, or 2 hours that he's going to be with the artist, because artists sometimes can go on and on and on. So what that's saying to somebody right away is, this artist savvy? Are they pushy? Are they beginning, mid? What level of business sense do they have by bringing the portfolio in with them? So what you all want to do is, obviously, you want to find out what their procedures are. If possible, you want to call ahead. I know now that some gallery websites will have on the website what their procedure is for reviewing artists' work and things like that. So this comes down again to the research. You want to go ahead and do as much research ahead of time as you can before you walk in that gallery. You know, what we're looking at here is basically we're taking good common business sense and we're translating it over to the art world. And I can guarantee you all, even though you may be professional, unfortunately a lot of the people in the world don't have those same standards that you have, whether it's gallery dealers or it's art consultants or whatever the case may be. But there's no reason why you can't be the one that's really professional about this. So the research ahead of time is really, really important. Now, even though a gallery may say, let's say something like this, oh, we review portfolios in January, there are a couple of kind of tricks of the trade, and please don't quote me on this, but to maybe try to get into a dialogue with someone, even though they've said that they're not looking at portfolios right now. I think one thing is to call them and find out what their procedure may be. Another thing to do is, if you're in the town and you can stop by, is to stop in, and obviously you want to stop in at a slow time, whether it's midweek or it's the off season or whatever the case may be. I'll tell you, your greatest chances of great failure are to go in when it's busy. So let's just say in the West, in west of the Rockies, some of these art markets get pretty seasonal. In Santa Fe, our winters are pretty quiet. In Scottsdale, where they have a pretty vibrant art market, their summers are pretty quiet. In some of the Colorado vacation towns, they have in-between seasons. And these are times when you all should think about approaching galleries. So what you want to do is you want to know when a quieter time, because last year I worked with, I worked with so many artists, but two artists told me that they got gallery representation from galleries that told them they weren't looking for new artists. Now, this is how they did it, you all, and it's funny how this becomes such an important marketing tool. They went into these galleries, didn't have a portfolio or anything like that, but what they had was a business card, and the business card had on it a really, really dynamic image, a just knock-you-dead image on it.
Excuse me, Jeffrey?
Yes.
This is Ariane. Is there a way that you could pick up the volume of your voice a bit? Sounds like some people are having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Is that better?
Keep talking.
Okay. How's that?
A little, maybe about 15% louder.
Oh, it is? Should I just start yelling? Oh, is that, I mean, should I... It's funny. This is not a problem people usually, especially my wife is always telling me how loud I am.
Right. No, you can actually crank it up about 15% more.
Okay. How's that?
That's better.
Okay,
great.
That's
thanks,
better.
Hon.
Oh, dear. I'll be exhausted by the end of this.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So a couple of kind of secret tips for you all. One is a really dynamic business card. Artists, everybody will take a business card from you because you can say something to them. You know, I can guarantee you within 5 minutes whether the work's going to be appropriate for you or not. Here's my business card. Or let's say maybe it's just an oversized postcard. But again, it's not the portfolio, okay? So there's another little tip for you all is a really, really good business card because in our business communities now, we will take business cards, even though dealers may say to you, I'm not looking at portfolios, blah, 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 whatever. So if possible, go in the slow season. Whenever possible, you all do it in person. It's amazing how when you're approaching dealers from afar, how difficult it becomes. And I worked with one artist named Michael Berg, who's a well-known egg tempera artist, and his number one tip for ambitious artists was travel. Travel and scope out new markets and meet the people in person. It's amazing how dealers sometimes feel like you're just kind of casting about, and if you can't even make the effort to come and see them, then why should they make the effort possibly to handle your work? So think about traveling. I mean, there are these real art meccas around the United States where you can go in places like Santa Fe, and there are a couple of towns up in Colorado, and where there are dozens and dozens and dozens of galleries, and it is worth it for you all to invest in the 3 days of flying out there, meeting the people, getting really, really serious about it. So that's number four. I happen to have the portfolio under my arm. Not a good idea, okay? One thing I'm getting artists to do is, and someone emailed me about this, is to start using these digital online portfolios that are published by some of these online web companies. What they have, and I recently with my own work did this in Scottsdale, I walked into a gallery and I had this little portfolio. It's a little tiny book, and it has a window on it, with a postcard image on it, and I held it out to them, and they said to me, "We're not looking at portfolios right now," and I kind of held this book out to them, and it had an image on the cover, but they said, "Boy, that's really curious. What you got there?" And it was one of these online digital books, and if you all don't know what I'm talking about, go to my website and click on it, and it kind of tells you all about them, and they're very easy to do, you all. You certainly don't have to have me to create your book for you. A lot of artists I'm working with are learning how to do this themselves, okay? So happen to have my portfolio. So let's move on to number five. Hopefully I'm loud enough here. The photographs don't do my work justice. Now, it's amazing how much weight a statement like that has, and it's funny how many artists even now, even emerging artists that I'm working with who maybe are showing in quite a few galleries, that I can't tell you all why, but for some reason the photography is not good. Now, again, in my experience, probably 90% of the artists that I work with are traditional or standard photographic ways to reproduce work are fine. Now, there may be that 5 or 10% of you whose work is so darn subtle that's like Agnes Martin, something like that, then, or reflective metal, things like that. But 90% of you traditional photography methods are just fine. You all, the number one thing that galleries look at is the photography of the work, right? I mean, they're judging the work right off from the quality of the work. Is the, some don'ts, is the work, is it kind of flat, low contrast? Is it kind of sepia toned? Is it washed out? Or there, by gosh, a sheet in the background where you photographed it. You all have to invest in your artwork, and what dealers are looking for is they're looking for artists that they're going to form partnerships that they know are very ambitious, that they're willing to invest, and the dealer is willing to invest, because a relationship with a dealer is a very, very serious business arrangement, and dealers that really are successful with artists, I found that it's a partnership. It's never one-sided. It's that each one is bringing something to the table here. So I can't stress with photography how critical it is now. Now, some of us, we don't have huge budgets to hire fancy photographers, things like that. Then, if that's the case, then you might get your 5 or 10 or 15 pieces professionally photographed, and the rest of the work that you're creating, you may just photograph it yourself and archive it with your own digital camera and just keep it on file. But invest in good photography. Whether another thing I see all the time is jury shows where the jurors will say to me, can't somebody tell them to have better quality photographs because these are just terrible. So the other thing is, you all don't forget this, that I believe about 90% of your art audience is going to view your art in a non-original, in a derivative. In other words, they're going to see your business card, they're going to see a brochure, they're going to see a portfolio, they're going to see a digital book, they're going to visit your website, they're going to see advertising, they're going to see a tear sheet. If the photography is bad right off the bat, it's a strike against you. So don't forget, you all, that, you know, with the gallery, oftentimes they're not going to see the original work. They're going to judge it from the photography. So I also mention in here what else in your portfolio is not up to speed. Is your resume updated? Resume should be updated every 3 months. Never handwrite on a resume, obviously, you all. Is your artist statement really accurate about the work that you're presenting in the portfolio? Is it also kind of giving them a secret into a good artist? Well, Ariana is, of course, a fabulous artist statement person, but artist statements are critical. They're kind of the mission statement for all of your work. Now, is your pricing consistent? A lot of gallery dealers, you know, now again, this is all through the portfolio. Is all of this up and running, and is it in really good shape? You all, what we don't want is we don't want to have to go into a sometimes intense, intimidating business meeting and apologize for anything. You want to be 100% confident, or at least faking it, about everything you've got. I was working with an artist recently, and I looked at his resume, and I said, how badly do you want to succeed? And he was kind of funny about it. Because he had spelled the town that he was living in wrong at the top of his resume. And, you know, little indicators like that, it's funny how they really send these messages to our audience. And when we're dealing with galleries, they're judging us from the way we're dressed, the way we speak, the way we photograph our artwork, the way we assemble our portfolio, our pricing structure. Now, not to say that there's not leeway here and that they're all just impossible to work with. That's not the case, but sometimes it is, and sometimes their time is very, very short. And if you can't be the one to really get your foot in the door, there's next, because we all know there are thousands of artists out there. And gallery dealers, basically, this is what I believe, is they have a group of artists that they're watching intimately, and it might be 5 to 20 artists where they're in a dialogue. They may have gone on studio visits. They may have followed their work. And they're looking for openings for them to be brought in. Now, how do you get your place in line ahead of them? Just by having everything that you present them just be really, really good quality, okay? So I really can't stress number 5, how critical it is. And it is a commitment, a financial commitment. I say to artists sometimes it takes 3 to 5 years to transition from being not making any money to your art to possibly even being able to make a living at it. Just like any other business, you have to invest in it. One is in really good photography for your website, for your portfolio, for your digital books, for your newsletter, for your business card, for your brochures, whatever. And it's funny how many gallery dealers still say to me, the photography was really cruddy. And I just like, because don't forget, you all, gallery dealers are looking for excuses not to take your work on. They're not looking for excuses to take you on. They're constantly, and, you know, supposedly they're not asking for this. You know, they're not soliciting the portfolio or the introduction or the whatever. So they're looking in their minds. They have checklists that they're working off of to say, I won't take this artist. And I know, watching other gallery dealers, they can go through this process really, really quickly. So everything just has to just be totally, totally up 5 is a biggie. Number 6, I will make you lots of money if you take my work. And again, you all, this may be shocking to some of you, but I heard that recently. I heard an artist do that with a gallery dealer recently. And money is a funny thing. We all, unfortunately, have to make it, but we don't always want to be blatant about the relationship that we're setting up with someone. And the other thing is there are a lot of gallery dealers out there that are doing it for a mixture of the passion, the love of the work, the real sense of wanting to find and help and support artists versus the money side of it, the balancing the income versus the passion of showing work that they really, really believe in. So I think a little bit of saying, I'll make you lots of money, is kind of putting the cart in front of the horse. And sometimes I think it's pretty awkward, you know. I think it can really embarrass people. And so what you have to do in everything you do is give this aura that you are a moneymaker, that you're a successful person. It's kind of the law of attraction. So what are some things you might do besides and you all, there's a danger in all of these of going to the other extreme. Now, your marketing material should not be too fancy. I'm not saying that. In other words, you know, it shouldn't be this leather portfolio, that black leather that when you touch it, it leaves a fingerprint, and this is my only copy, you can't lose it. I'm not saying that. It has to be, your marketing material is disposable. It's something where as the longer that the gallery dealer can hold on to your portfolio, theoretically, the better the chances are that you all might get into some sort of a dialogue or a relationship. So you've got to make marketing material that is good looking but not super expensive. Sometimes I find that artists do things like their logo is really fancy and their paper is really fancy and their website has flash and bells and music, and you can tell they've invested a lot of money into the marketing material. The danger there, you all, is that gallery dealers are worried that it may be someone with money but maybe not ambition. In other words, an artist who is really, really committed to doing great work, to working hard, to keeping their prices reasonable, to getting work on any deadline that's required, to being prolific, things like that. So you have to walk this fine line of being professional, but not being too fancy about it. I mean, one woman I know, she literally hired an advertising firm to write all of her marketing material. And when I got it, I said to this woman, is this you or is this like this company? Because it's so slick. Everything in here, your logo is slick and your artist statement doesn't sound like a real person, and your typesetting, you can tell, is expensive and blah, blah. Don't forget, you all, what the world we're working in is we're working in one-of-a-kind, very personal visions here. I mean, in other words, your artwork, it's very, very personal, and it's not something mass-produced and going to go to 10,000 people in a year. It's not that. So be careful about the whole money thing. You know, the way to say money is you may talk about a show that sold out. You may talk about a client list that you have. You may talk about magazine articles that got written about. You may talk about museum shows and getting into collections, things like that. I mean, that's what says to gallery dealers that there's possibly a market for your work, okay? So there's a difference here. And again, it falls back to the resume and kind of the whole aura of how you are. And I'm really asking you all to be very, very active in your careers in terms of showing. You know, a museum curator recently told me the best time to contact him was when you needed him the least, or it was a gallery dealer that said that to me. They said, you know, when the artist is so busy, that's when they're the most attractive. So anyways, number 6, I will make lots of money for you. Number 7, but I've sold art at that price. You all, what we're talking about is we're talking about in today's class possibly this first dialogue that you're having with a gallery dealer, kind of like the first job interview. We're not talking about further down the road. We're talking about with a lot of this kind of cold calling almost is what I would call it. where we really haven't started any rapport with the gallery dealer, and we're just getting the dialogue going. One thing the gallery dealers are really, really wary about is artists who are pretty rigid about how they're running their businesses. You're going to find that a lot of these galleries are run by one, two, three people. They're very, very small businesses when you think about it, tiny, tiny businesses that are basically built on relationships is what they're built on. Now, obviously, when you get to the larger galleries where they're national and they've got 8 or 10 or 15 people, that's a different story. Most of the clients I'm working with are working with these smaller galleries, and they want to set up a partnership with artists. And one thing they're going to look at is they're going to look at your pricing. And some of you on this call, I'm sure, have had this experience where they've said, the gallery dealer has said, that's too high, my client base won't take this, or that's too low, can we raise the prices? You all, especially when you're kind of going out the gate and you're starting to establish any sort of track record, you've got to be somewhat flexible on the pricing, okay? So they're going to want to know, where did you sell the work? Was it at art fairs? Was it in your studio? Was it on the internet? Now, do you see what I mean? I mean, those are all different venues versus the art gallery. Now, the other thing it may say is that you've approached the wrong gallery. One way for artists to, let's say, upgrade their galleries is when they make a price jump, sometimes what happens is they price out that, let's say, emerging gallery out of there. In other words, the emerging gallery has a price structure up to, you know, I can't get really specific here, it depends on the artist, but you've got to be careful that if your pricing is drastically wrong, you may be approaching the wrong gallery. There's a gallery in Santa Fe called Gerald Peters Gallery, and it's pretty blue chip, but it handles about a dozen New Mexico artists. I can tell you that Gerald Peters Gallery, their price structure is very, very high. So when an artist comes to me and goes, well, I want to be with Gerald Peters, and I say, well, your prices aren't even half what they're handling. They go, well, I'll just double them. But then it goes back to, you know, when you raise your prices, what sort of shows have you had? What sort of critical attention have you had? What sort of collections are you in? Have you done any public commissions? So things like that. So pricing is very interesting, you all. What I would recommend, obviously, is instead of saying I've sold pieces at that, is you know ahead of time what their price structure is approximately. You know, you've gone in, you've maybe looked at the other artists they work with, you've looked at their resumes, you've looked at their pricing, you're familiar with unframed and framed and limited editions, whatever the case may be. So here's another case of really doing your research ahead of time, okay? Number 8, another gallery dealer said you had to look at my work. This is a really tricky one, you all. In a town like Santa Fe where we've got so many galleries, what I find is I find that these artists will go from gallery to gallery and they'll drop the name of another gallery and you just don't believe it. You don't believe it. You figure if that other gallery dealer was so impressed with your work that they're going to call you because, you know, there is a certain etiquette in the gallery world that if something comes along where you really think another dealer should see the work, then you call them and you say, hey, you know, there's this artist from Chicago and I recommended he see you because the work is really, really good. So watch out. Now, you know, in parentheses there, I said the watching out for being pushy. You know, there is a P word you use, and I think the P word is professional, not pushy. In other words, if you were an architect or a graphic designer or a photographer or anybody in the design field, professionally, how do you present yourself to new clients? You are professional and you're persistent and you're ambitious, but you're not going to be pushy about it. So this is one where, now remember at the beginning of the class, I said the best way for a gallery dealer to look at an artist's work is to get a reference from either an artist or, you know, now that's an actual live reference, you all. So the great way to really turn a gallery dealer off is to say, I was speaking with so-and-so, and they said you'd really like my work. Now, think how presumptuous that is, but it happens all the time, you all. It happens all the time where artists kind of get caught up in it, and especially in a town like Santa Fe where there's so many galleries. It's funny now when artists ask me, will you call up these galleries and present my portfolio? I'm like, no, you've got to do that. I mean, that's your job. They want to see what you're like. They want to see what type of a person you are. So anyway, so number eight is basically using an authentic introduction to somebody. Now, there's nothing wrong with, I kind of think of it as throwing yourself at the mercy of the courts. My name is so-and-so. I've been at it for 3 years. I don't have gallery representation. I do think the work is good. I do think it is appropriate for your gallery. I'd love to, you know, show you a portfolio, send you digital files, leave this book with you, whatever the case may be. I mean, you know, some of us don't have that track record. So I think being honest and straightforward, really believing in yourself, there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, the other thing that dealers are looking for is they're looking for artists who are really excited about the work that they're creating. So I think that's kind of the best introduction you have in that type of a case. So, okay, on to number nine. I don't take discounts on my pricing. Now, this is funny, and I just got an email. It may have been from somebody that's joining us today. Discounting happens a lot, you all, in the gallery world. Discounting happens everywhere, as we know. We're told differently. And by the way, artists can lower their prices. And be, oh, no, artists can never lower their prices. Well, that's not been my actual practical experience. But one thing that happens in the art world is that discounts are given on sales. And I think about 5 years ago, Art and Antiques did an article on collecting, and they kind of let the cat out of the bag and said that discounts, you know, most people can get from a 10 to 20% discount working with galleries. So my gallery experience is any savvy collector is going to ask you for a discount. Now, so if you go to a gallery deal and you go, boy, I don't accept discounts, it's like suddenly in that relationship, you've just really chipped away at being a partner with this dealer. I can tell you, being a gallery dealer, it's a tough business right now in this up-and-down economy. It's not like people are just throwing money at, let's say, emerging artists, especially in a town like Santa Fe. A lot of these sales, your salespeople and your gallery dealers, they're really working with the clients. They're really trying to tell them who you are. They're trying to tell them, you know, where your career is, why the pricing is like this. Then when it comes down to the bottom line, sometimes it comes down to the fact of pricing. It comes down to who has fair pricing, who's willing to work with me, things like that. Now, you all, this is a standard, but to say there are any standards is a bit of a myth. But the standard is usually what the gallery contract is. The gallery will have permission to discount the work up to 15% without calling the artist. Now, so what that would mean is that each of you would split that 15%, so it'd be 7.5 each. Anything over that, any discount larger than that, the gallery has to contact the artist, speak with the artist, and get the artist's permission. Things can happen, a lot of different things, from multiple sales, from a major, major client coming in, from, you know, the dreaded word, art consultants, whatever the case may be. And so dealers often now are actually trying to stand their ground with 10 or 15%. So again, now what that says to them right away is that you're going to be probably a pretty difficult person to work with if you won't accept discounts. So just another indicator there to the gallery dealer. Now remember at the beginning of the class, what we talked about is the gallery dealers are looking to set up a successful business relationship with an artist. Unfortunately, sometimes it feels like the artist is always at the bottom end of the food chain, but that's what they're doing in a gallery relationship is really, really important. And so number nine is just kind of one indicator to a gallery dealer, how flexible is this artist to work with. So you all, we did it. We did it in 45 minutes. We went through nine things that I believe an artist should not say to a gallery dealer. Again, feel free to follow up with questions, things like that. Visit me at Artist Cube.
Jeffrey?
Yes.
Do you mind if I jump in here and ask you, I think, what might be three pretty quick answer questions?
Yep.
Okay. One of them is, should the portfolios have prices in them?
Yes, they should have yes, they should, and they should be retail prices. In other words, you know, it's 50, it's double.
Okay. And then another one asked that the she was told that she should charge per the per square inch. And are there pricing tier changes that go through different trends of popularity?
Pricing per square inch works in the mid-range. The problem is in the larger pieces and the tinier pieces, square inch doesn't work as well. So sometimes it's kind of what the market will bear.
Okay. And then the other one was, if you show up at a gallery, is it okay to leave a business card as opposed to coming in with a whole portfolio?
Yeah, and often gallery dealers will say to me, I wish they had left something.
Okay.
But I didn't know how to get a hold of them. Obviously, your business card is going to have your main information now is your email address.
Now, another interesting caveat that I've come across, and I'm just wondering what you have come across with this, is that gallery owners, this is what I've heard, frown on business cards saying artist after it, that it somehow makes it tacky and they just want your name and your information. But if they don't know what you do...
I know, because... you probably run into this with artist statements. I think it's nice to have a descriptive word on what you do. I mean, what I put under my name, I say old sticks, new ideas. You know,
use a tagline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, give them some idea because it's amazing how dense we can be.
Right, but you don't say artist on your business card.
No, you don't, but your business card says artist.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's clear that's what you are. You don't need to make the word there.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. I just wanted to, those came in just while you were talking, and I thought they were
fine.
Quick. Is there anything else, Jeffrey, that you want to wrap up with?
No, I think I covered them all.
Great. Thank you, Jeffrey.
That was sure fun. Thank you.
Boy, I am sure we are all the wiser after listening to this presentation. It was great having you participate, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for including me.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, now we're going to take a 15-minute break. We're going to come back online at exactly 2:45 for Claudine Helmuth. And we're not going to check in like I do at the beginning, you know, schmooze around. It's going to be hit the dirt running. I'm going to introduce Claudine, and we're going to move straight forward. So go grab a cup of coffee, put your feet up, walk around, shake your head. You know, maybe just literally kind of do a brain dump where you just stand in one space for a minute and just feel all you've heard so far just kind of dropping right out through you into the earth so that you have some clear space when Claudine comes in. Because I don't know about you, but whoa. This has been an enormous amount of information for one day. All right, signing off. See you in 15. Bye.